George out of the right corner for three. Rattles. Oh, it rattled off and then crashed into the rim and grabbing it in one motion, slamming it with two hands, was Calvin Miles Jr. He's known for his perimeter shooting, but that time, much like a kangaroo in the open field, he jumped to the rim, grabbed it, and slammed it, and the discombobulated Knicks need another timeout.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter, TV host and sideline reporter, as always, Jeremiah Johnson joining us. JJ, we've, had pretty good luck this season when we've been doing these podcasts in that typically they've happened to come after a couple wins or a recent five-game winning stretch. That's not been the case recently. Indiana has dropped three straight, including two straight on the road. Those games which you were at, and then the one most recently against New York at home. I guess your general thoughts on this recent stretch of play?
I think that when you analyze this team in the two or three days after Christmas, you had a lot of reason to question who they were and whether they could be a playoff team. And then you think about the 2 weeks following that when the Pacers had won 7 of 8, and you'd think, you know, this team is a legitimate contender for a 4 or 5 seed. And then after what has happened over the last three games, you start to question everything again. So, I think it's very difficult to just take a snapshot of one or two games. But the thing that is a realistic assessment is through 44 games, this team is probably about a 7th seed in the Eastern Conference, maybe the 7th best team. And I think that many people thought they would be better than that. But what I've seen right now over the course of this season is a team that has some talent, has a lot of talent, but goes through lapses in games. In certain games, they're able to overcome them. In other games, they are not. And there are going to be frustrating matchups and frustrating situations and basically games they just do not play well. And we've seen that over the last week. I think they're very capable of going and winning 5 out of their next 6 games. I think that is very realistic. And if they do that, does that mean that everything is spectacular and all of a sudden this is a team that might advance to the Eastern Conference Finals? I'm just not sure that this team has that kind of ceiling, but I do think that given if everything goes well for them that they can play well. I just think they haven't played well over the last week.
And I know we've talked about it, but a lot of that struggle, I think, is the fact that it's tough to consistently win when you don't consistently rebound well. You give Nate McMillan a lot of credit, I think, in the fact that he is willing to try to change things. And we saw him throw C.J. Miles into the starting lineup. It was something that he did one time earlier this year and then went back to Monte. I believe it was the game in Philadelphia. This is the lineup that I know personally, before the season, I was wanting to see. They're 0-2 with it would be the downside of it. The positive would be they got out to a really nice start with that lineup against New York, and then it was when they went to the second unit and had to give those guys a blow where some of that lead ultimately went away. And that's not to pin it all on the bench by any means, because the starters came back in and then also struggled. But having CJ in there offers a bit of a unique look in that they've got what is probably their best pure shooter in the starting lineup along with Paul and Jeff Teague.
True. The only counter to that would be for CJ to be effective, you've got to get him a number of shots. And this is where I thought Glenn Robinson III being in the starting lineup may have been the perfect mix, because he did not need the ball. He did not need as many shots. And if CJ is playing alongside Paul George and Jeff Teague and Miles Turner, you've got four guys on the floor that just, they've got to get the ball in their hands. Now, you could say that Jeff Teague doesn't have to score as much to be effective, and that would be accurate as well. But I think that playing those five guys together, or specifically those four, leaving Thaddeus Young out of the mix because, you know, he's the one guy that maybe doesn't have to have the ball as much, I think it does create some problems over the long haul. So I thought it was interesting when asked about the starting lineup decision, the change, and the future, that Nate McMillan said yesterday that we're close to getting our guys back and everybody back healthy. And it almost seemed like that this is a little bit of a temporary thing. And I think if nothing else, you've seen CJ Miles now in his third season with the Pacers go through stretches where he is really, really good, or at times he struggles to score. And there are usually, and this is what we've at least seen over the last couple of seasons, even into this season, each stretch, it lasts about a month. And while CJ's had some good games in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I wouldn't say we're in the middle of a CJ Miles hot streak. But I think that that's capable of happening, and maybe putting him in the starting lineup is just a chance for him to catch fire and then maybe move back to a bench role. I'm not saying that that is what I think is happening, but I'm curious what you thought, Pat, listening to Nate McMillan talk yesterday. He kept referencing, we're close to getting all of our guys back. And really, while Monte Ellis left with an ankle injury and did not fully participate in practice yesterday, my observation would be that this is not a long-term thing, and he could even play on Thursday, and that Rodney Stuckey is the only player that is not healthy. And for a team at this point in the season to have one player who is actually not actually a starter, to have one player that's injured, that's not bad injury luck. And so they're close to having every player available. And if Rodney Stuckey is back and available, I still think that CJ alongside Rodney in the second unit is what that second unit needs to possibly then play maybe with Monte and Al. And that's the second unit I think that is best. But I think that maybe what Nate is looking at is Glenn or Monte best to go with the starting unit. This is just me reading in between the lines a little bit at what he said and what I think about CJ Miles and what he needs to do to be effective. But CJ was acquired to be a backup, to come in, to provide energy and shooting. And I think that's where he can help this team still moving forward. I like the move on Monday to start him. I like to see what will happen to start this game on Thursday. But more importantly, I think that everyone just needs to see CJ Miles catch fire and have that last for about a month or two. And the Pacers will be so much better off if that happens.
Yeah, we've seen since he's been here how much of an X factor he is, in that when he is shooting well, the Pacers have had a tendency to play well during those stretches. And you can, you know, we've talked about at times how the Pacers struggle to have that energy guy. It's Miles Turner sometimes. CJ Miles certainly is that. When he comes in and hits a couple threes, you definitely feel the energy boost up. And yeah, it was good to see, even though you mentioned Monte wasn't a full participant in practice, also just from the observations that we got to see of practice, it did look like that his injury didn't appear long-term. He was out around on it. You know, we just see the very end of practices where they're just kind of typically shooting around. But it didn't appear to really hinder him too much. And yeah, when you get him and Stuckey and, you know, potentially CJ into a second unit, that could look really good. And, you know, I go back to a conversation I had with CJ back in November. It was right after, pretty sure that game was in Philadelphia where he started. And CJ, I asked him if he preferred one of starting or the bench, and he didn't really give a total concrete answer, but he did say something that I thought was a little bit interesting, and that he felt that he had really good chemistry with the second unit. And then moving back at the time, again, this is mid-November, but moving back to the second unit for him, he was a little bit more comfortable with, because he knew the guys around him. He knew they knew him. He knew where to pick his spots, whereas you mentioned a really good point. When you've got a team that has Jeff Teague, who needs to be on the ball so much, of course, Paul George needs the ball in his hands a lot. You don't want to take the ball away from Miles Turner. Are you utilizing CJ Miles in the best way when he's a fourth option versus being a first or a second option off the bench? That's a tough question to answer, and I think it's something that Nate McMillan is experimenting with, because I think you could certainly make the case that right now, you know, your five best guys are on the floor, but we've seen a lot of teams throughout the NBA who, you know, prefer to use that dynamite guy and have one of them off the bench, a Lou Williams for the Lakers, for example. And that team right now, at least, doesn't have a lot of good starters as it is. He's maybe their best player, and he comes off the bench. So that's a decision for the coaching staff. One thing it did, Nate McMillan brought up, and I didn't realize this at least until after the game, is that part of what he was trying to do with CJ in there was move him to the three and Paul to the two and get Paul some different looks at the two, which I asked McMillan about at practice yesterday, and he said there isn't that much of a difference other than flipping to the other side of the court. But Paul played pretty well in that game against New York, and it'll be interesting to me to see if that's something they try to experiment with here more going forward. The two and the three in the Pacers system are fairly similar, but part of that decision from Nate McMillan was to move Paul over to the two, and I think if nothing else, just try to get him a fresh set of looks on a different part of the court.
Yeah, I'm the same way as you, that when we were watching the game, I thought that CJ moved from the two to the four at different times, because then late in the game, Thaddeus Young was not on the floor, and it looked like CJ was maybe playing the four, and it showed CJ's versatility. But, you know, in talking with guys, and it makes a lot of sense, the two and the three is not that different. It sometimes just depends on who can guard the other dynamic shooting guard if there is a team with that kind of backcourt. And you immediately would think about maybe the Portland Trailblazers. But, you know, Paul has shown in that situation, he's probably the guy that's going to guard the explosive shooting guard anyways. And so, you know, that kind of makes some sense that Paul's maybe more of the two in that situation. But something that I was just thinking about as you were talking, and I was even thinking a little bit about yesterday in this two and three discussion, is let's think about this. Let's think about when Glenn Robinson III probably had his most success that he has had this season. What position was he playing? Paul George was injured, and Glenn was playing the three in that starting lineup. Right. So if you start CJ Miles and you're playing basically CJ at the three and Paul at the two, what you're doing is you're putting Glenn in that second unit, and it maybe is hampered a little bit depending on Monte and Aaron Brooks, but you're giving an opportunity, I think, to let Glenn be a backup three. So if he gets some confidence with the second unit playing the three, then maybe he can come back into the starting unit with the three and Paul's the two. Now, once again, these are just two quote-unquote sideline guys making an observation and thinking about what could be happening, and it's not what, you know, anything that has happened based on a conversation with any of the coaching staff, but they say it's not that much of a change, but it is a change in terms of the side of the floor, and the numbers will bear out, and I'm sure I'll bring this up, and then you'll look it up for me. That's how these things usually work, but we could look up the numbers of this season when Glenn's been the three and the success he's had. So maybe that's something that they want to get back to moving forward. The thing that I would think is that what you've seen over the last week does not mean that they've lost confidence in Glenn Robinson III, just that they'd like to see him regain it a little bit, gain some of that confidence that he had in late November and early December and basically the time that Paul George was injured. And if he can provide that kind of play to the starting lineup, it will make a world of difference. But when your position, one of your starters occasionally goes through games with 0 points, 2 points, two rebounds, you just have to have a little more impact than that from someone that's playing those kind of minutes. So I really look to see what Glenn's able to do coming off the bench again Thursday, how he takes, you know, it's not necessarily a demotion. I mean, this is a guy at his age that is starting probably ahead of schedule, but he has to know that he's got to bring a little bit more to the table to be a starter on this team moving forward.
Switching gears a touch, I'm curious from your perspective, because, you know, we get into such a rhythm during the season. You're traveling, I'm not. That London game, personally, you know, I'm sure was a little bit different to have that extended time off in between games. And with that being that game against New York on TNT, I don't know about you. I was doing my normal radio role, obviously, during the game, but didn't have the TV stuff afterward. This is not the first time you guys haven't been able to do a game because of a national broadcast, but it felt kind of weird not having the typical Chris and Quinn and doing the game right next to me and you over there in the huddles with me. It felt a little odd. What was that like for you, just all of a sudden in the middle of a season, having a game where you just kind of sat there as a fan's not the right word, but as an observer?
It was interesting because while it has happened, it has not happened too many times while I've been in this position. If you think last season, I thought it was pretty cool that we were able to say that Fox Sports Indiana broadcast all 82 games. Now, you could argue that maybe it was disappointing to some fans, especially maybe some of those that, you know, do not live in Central Indiana or in the Fox Sports Indiana coverage area, that none of the Pacer games last season were on TNT. And for those that aren't aware, if a game is on TNT or ABC, it moves off of the local telecast. We do not even have the option of broadcasting that game. If it is on ESPN, we do have the option, and at, a credit to Fox Sports Indiana and Fox Sports Midwest that we have taken advantage of that opportunity over the last 3 years. There have not been any games that we've not broadcast during the regular season that we've been able to broadcast. So when this season started, last season, we did all 82. The season prior to that, I think we did 81 of 82, if memory serves. I think when the season started, we were scheduled to not do two games, and then one of those games ended up being dropped. And I'm pretty sure the Tuesday before the final regular season game, the Pacers played the Wizards in a home game. It went to like double overtime, I believe, and we did not broadcast that game. And I sat in the same chair I sat on Monday next to you and Chris Denary just watching the game. So when this season started, there were going to be four games that we were not going to quote-unquote work our normal schedule. One of those was going to be the Celtics game just prior to Christmas. Well, that night, the Miami Heat decided to retire Shaquille O'Neal's jersey in Miami, and the Lakers were taking on the Heat. So it was not a decision because the Pacers-Celtics game was not high-profile enough. Given Shaq's ties to TNT, that was also a Thursday night. It was natural for them to blow that out and broadcast that game. So we were dropped, and then we picked that up at Fox Sports Indiana. So this was our first game, Pacers-Knicks, on Monday in quite some time to be there and not work. And I'll tell you what, going into the game, I was really looking forward to it just to have that different perspective. But at the end of the night, it wasn't as much fun as I thought it would be. It does. Yeah. It is a good reminder of how much I enjoy my job and how much I enjoy really everything about it. And it starts with the preparation, and it continues with our meetings before the games and our interviews prior to the games, and the opportunity to give fans stories to talk about and pregame show and in-game. I thought it would be great fun to just sit there and watch and not have anything to do. And for most of the day, I felt like I was doing something wrong. And at the end of the day, I didn't feel quite that fulfilled. Now, I did some work. I did a couple of interviews that I hope to share on television over the next week or so. But I'm excited to get back to work, I guess I'll say, on Thursday. And I'm glad that you were able to at least do your job on Monday.
Part of it. But it did feel weird because, you know, typically as the broadcast goes on, you know, my television role, for those who don't know specifically, is just the post-game locker room interview. So during the game, I'm part of the radio broadcast. But I'm always, you know, if something happens, a run specifically, an interesting play, I typically try to jot it down. Because while we do have a walk-off radio interview, I'm always thinking of questions to ask in the locker room. And it was weird because a couple times I found myself, you know, jotting down, okay, you know, the score was this time at this point, and then you guys went on this run or whatever, and then was like, oh yeah, I'm not actually going into the locker room afterward, and I probably don't, you know, need to be doing this. So it was odd from my standpoint, even though the game during the game my role was the exact same. It just felt weird having Chris and you two seats to my left without a headset on, and you know, you guys were just generally talking about the game as it was going on. It was kind of different. I guess that's as natural.
You'll probably enjoy that we're getting back to work, because I kept trying to talk to you, and you have obviously were busy working with your headset on. And you kept having to take it off and say what, and hopefully you didn't miss any of your hits.
Well, the difficulty of it was I usually do the one headset on, the one ear piece on, one ear piece off kind of deal, with the right side off. So if Benner needs to tell me something, he doesn't have to tap me and I have to move my headset. Well, there was also times where I was trying to talk to you and ask you something or say something to you. And I'm like, well, wait, if I take both of these off, then I'm not even listening to Mark, which is ultimately what I need to be doing. You were on my left. Benner was on my right. So yeah, that was that was interesting. And but you know, it's kind of a catch 22.
Good topic, Pat, because we didn't have to actually talk about what we were watching.
it's funny though, because you mentioned it was cool doing 82 games, but ultimately, you know, the team a few years ago, when they were going to Eastern Conference Finals and all that, had more nationally televised games. So I guess ultimately, you know, while we love doing the games, and certainly it's more true for you with you know, with you having a bigger role in television than I do, but the more the team wins, the more they probably get on national TV. So there's a little give and take there. But I guess when you're winning, you're also going to the playoffs, which allows potential to do some games in the playoffs as well. So,
make no mistake. We want the team to do as well as they can, and if TNT picks the game off,
that's the ultimate. It,
we're happy for the franchise, but we're never one to say, yes, I'm glad that game's on TNT tonight, because we'd like to remind everybody that we're with the team all season long, and hopefully, especially those nights that it's on ESPN as well as Fox Sports Indiana, and I speak for my Fox Sports Indiana colleagues, that hopefully you make the choice to watch the local broadcast.
Well, I didn't think we were going to get any sort of natural transition into our pick three, but that's actually, I think, as close as we're going to get. Our pick three this week is a little bit off topic, but it got me thinking yesterday. If you didn't see it, there's coverage on Pacers.com and on the Pacers Twitter. The Pacers have a new partnership with Southwest Airlines, and as part of that partnership, they did a job switching deal yesterday out at the airport, where Miles Turner, you know, put on the, what do you call those guys? They're not traffic controllers, because that's the guy who sits in the tower, but the guys who put the orange cones up and direct the planes in. I saw George Niang was on the speaker over one of the flights, welcoming people aboard and all that. So they did a trading jobs kind of situation, and it got me thinking. First of all, let's say this, and I think I'm speaking for you with this. I don't want to trade my job with anything. If anything, this is what most people I think would want to trade jobs for, jobs that you and I are fortunate enough to have. But I got thinking, if we weren't fortunate enough to have these jobs, and let's just say out of the industry total, because I know you were at Fox 59 before this, and I had a job before this in broadcasting. If you weren't able to work in broadcasting, pick three jobs that you otherwise would be interested in. I'll let you go first.
No. This is your topic, right, so I think right, it's right, only fine, fitting that fine, you, that fine. You get to go first.
I'm gonna say detective. You know those guys on Law and Order or whatever. I think it would be interesting to see part of I know at least certainly for me is my brain isn't wired for a sit down 9-to-5 desk job. Nothing against that at all. But that's just, I like having each day be totally different, which is certainly true in this industry. And I think if you're a detective, that's probably also true too. I think it would be interesting to track down the bad guys. You see them doing all the, I don't know, I'm probably not smart enough for that. But if I were smart enough, to do all the puzzles and the putting together of a mystery and trying to catch, you know, the bad guy or whatever. And we work nights and long hours, so that wouldn't be a problem. I think I'd like to be one of those guys that tries to, you know, you go to the scene of the crime and you're left with very little and you try to put the puzzle pieces together.
So you're big on, like, watching the CSI shows and all of
right.
the you like to watch those. And when you're no Pacer game, that's what Pat Boylan's doing on a Tuesday night?
Not always, but but I just think that job seems interesting. Different day to day, day in, day out. I'm sure extremely rewarding when you're able to close a case like that. And I'm aware that the CSI type cases are, that's cream of the crop, if you will, in terms of general interest and all that. But I think that would be an interesting and rewarding job, and a job that would be different day in and day out. And I'm probably not smart enough for it, but if I were, and I weren't allowed to do this, that would be it. What say you?
All right. Since you gave the first answer, it's given me a few minutes to actually think and debate as I look around my office and see things that I like and things that I interest me. And I think what you said is worth repeating, that I do not want to trade jobs with anyone. And, and you know, we've obviously both had different smaller markets that we had to start and sort of cut our teeth, and those were rewarding, sometimes not financially and sometimes difficult for family members, but they both kind of helped us get to where we are today. And even in the media, I mean, you could think of how many different media type positions are out there. I could not think of one position that I would rather have. So I'm not out searching for another job, even though this pick three question is jobs you could quote unquote trade places with. But I'll eliminate all media jobs because I think that that's sort of what I went to school to do. And the reason was one of the reasons was my first internship in college was at a Fort Wayne TV station and did not get paid anything. But I just love the fact that every day I went and I did something different. And while there is some repetition currently with this job, it's a little more repetition than maybe working in news or in television, local television. It's pretty awesome. So we are not looking for new jobs, but the one I'm going to go with is one that I can see some parallels in terms of to make it big, you've got to start in a similar area. But I'm going to go thoroughbred horse trainer. And I think about people like Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas back in the days who reached the pinnacle of their profession. And every Triple Crown season, they became stars because you saw them on your television and they were, you know, trading a top three-year-old in the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont. But that is just one small part of what their job is. And as at the point that they were at in their careers, and Bob Baffert's still going strong, I think Dwayne Lucas has some, and I could rattle off any other number of top trainers, but they've got a stable of, you know, hundreds, some maybe Baffert might even have close to 1,000 horses that he has to oversee. And he gets to do some travel, which is something that I like and one of the aspects of this job that I do enjoy. He gets to, you know, he's a part of a team, which is kind of what I like as well. And he's in that sort of, you know, when the lights come on and our pregame show starts, I get a little bit of adrenaline flowing. And I think that there's no doubt the horse trainers have that. Now, there's a lot of work involved that people don't see in the morning. Sometimes most horses, they work out and run around the track and gallop and train, you know, sometimes before the sun comes up. So these guys, a little bit like my grandpa, who was a farmer, you've got to get a lot of your work done in the morning before the rooster crows. And I kind of like that aspect. I like some of the behind the scenes work a little bit is what they would have to do out of the spotlight. And then I like to see some of that behind the scenes work, you know, pay off in the spotlight. So, you know, I think that it'd be tough to get into that industry without having some direct connection, and you'd have to start with a few horses and hope that one of them did well, and then you'd have to have some owners that trusted you. But I do have a friend that kind of went off path a little bit and is doing that on the side a little bit right now and is having some success, and I think that that would be fascinating to be a part of, and if I had to change places, that'd be maybe a direction I might go.
Well, that's appropriate because the pick three is based off of horse racing, so that makes sense.
Exactly. That's we did not originate the thought of a pick three, but that, you know, that's the first thing I thought of, and so when I thought about it, it was, you know, you got to go three for three to have any success. So hopefully you liked our first two picks, and I, having not actually talked about this prior to the podcast, it's going to be difficult for us to come up with a group consensus, but I'm curious what you think about a coach.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. I like that. That would still be in sports.
Still in sports, but not necessarily in the media.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a good group pick would be, your dad was a coach, correct?
My dad was a coach, and both of my parents were teachers. And if you had to ask me in, you know, my sophomore year of high school of what I probably was going to be when I grew up, I think that it was probably natural because it was just kind of what I knew to be a teacher and a coach. And while I was in college, I did some work as a peer mentor with students at Ball State, and I even did some substitute teaching during like spring break or winter vacation, and I enjoyed that. But I didn't get the bug as much as I did when I did the television work in high school and in college and then with the internship. So, unfortunately I haven't had a chance just due to my schedule and different things to be able to coach my son and as many of his activities, which, you know, he's only eight, so he's not had a number of opportunities, but I only was a coach for him one season of flag football. And I've watched other people coach him, and I probably wish I could have done a little bit more with that, and maybe with my youngest, a few more of those youth sports activities, I can try to coach him up a little bit. But being a teacher and a coach, I think, would be a great rewarding job in terms of personal satisfaction, and I love to see, you know, the interaction at all levels. I love to see the guys that work with my son right now in basketball, and then I like to see the high school coaches. Last night, I went to the Zionsville Pike game, and you know, you see so many coaches out there, you know, out of the spotlight, that think about the hours a high school coach right now has to put in, especially at the varsity level, how much of a year-round sport it is, and what the actual financial rewards are. They're minuscule, and there are guys who have been able to go from high school to college and maybe to the pros, and you know, guys can latch on and make a great living, but there are so many more other coaches who, you know, they just do it for the love and the passion, and I have great respect for all of them.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I think that would be a fun job to, you know, you stay around the game, certainly, and I know that's, you know, sports, at least for me, was the first thing that attracted me to do this job. It was sports, and then a close second, of course, you know, was the thrill of being on the microphone and on TV and on radio. And I think it's something that's it's kind of tough to replicate when, you know, when you're on air, because it's you and it's, you know, there's certainly you have assistants, assistant CE, not TS, from people, you know, that help make the broadcast work. But ultimately, you know, when you're on air and the camera's on and the red light is on and the lights are on, it's you that has got to get yourself through that. And I think that's one of the things that's always attracted me to this industry, is that, you know, it's almost like parachuting, and then it's your job to figure out, you know, when you got to do what, you know, switch to a topic, get off air. If you stumble for a minute, lose your train of thought, it's you that's got to get yourself out of that situation. I think just kind of the thrill of that is always something that has interested me, and I think that's driven me to this job. And I don't think that you really get in many other careers. But yeah, I think a coach would be fun. And I'm trying to think. I know where I was going to go with this. This might surprise you. When I was going into college? Yeah, going into freshman year of college. I think you know at least one of these people, and it's going to make you laugh when you hear it if you do. I actually coached with two other guys going into freshman year of college. So I was too young to be coaching. We coached a baseball team, a Carmel Dads Club baseball team, and it was with Sam Agee and Nolan Blair. And the three of us coached kids that were only like four or 5 years younger. Let's see, we would have been 18, and they would have been like 13 or 14. So they were only handful of years younger than us. And
so they're serious baseball players at that age.
Yeah, it was seventh and eighth graders, and going into eighth grade, and we were going into, you know, freshman year of college, so 13th. And anyways, you play like a 15 game regular season. Our team went 14-1, and then won the championship. Which every year I played in Carmel Dads Club, the rec league in Carmel, I never won a championship in baseball or in basketball. Never won one. Every single year, that's all I wanted to do. It's all a kid wants. It's like the top of a kid's wish list. It's just to win the championship in their league. Never, ever got to do it. Came close a few times, obviously. Never got to do it. Did 1 year of coaching. Went 14-1. Won the championship. And then they asked, that year they did like an all-star league right afterward, and it was a much shorter, abbreviated version. It was like a month long, and you know there were 12 teams, and they shrunk it down to three teams of the best players. And they asked if we'd be interested in doing it, and we were. And you know, we had that little draft of the players or whatever. And then our all-star team went like 9-1 and won the all-star championship. So as a coach, like Greg Popovich has nothing on me. I have a sterling record. Two seasons, two championships. So part of the reason I wouldn't want to be a coach is because my coach record is flawless, and it's going to stay that way.
You retired on top. That is that is very impressive. And I guess the next time we should continue this podcast into the summer, and we can talk baseball.
Yeah. You know, it's we.
As long as you don't talk about the Cardinals too much.
Well, that's fair. You know, I think the whole origination of this sideline guy's name came from a couple of times you and I get asked by Greg Rakestraw to do a Saturday morning show during the off season. We do it a couple of times over, you know, the 5 month off season or whatever, but I think that's where this originated from. And that's a good idea. We should do this podcast a couple of times, maybe once a month during the off season, and talk a little Pacers basketball. I know you're a baseball fan. I'm a baseball fan. I don't know if anybody else cares about our baseball opinions.
Here's my, I guess, my follow-up to close the book on this subject. Why don't you coach a little summer baseball once the season ends at Carmel Dads Club? I'm sure they would take you back.
I told you, because my record is perfect and I don't want to mess with it.
Okay. That's some, that sounds like something your colleague Mark Boyle would say.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. So yeah, if we were forced to trade places with somebody, those are the three jobs that we would do. All right. Let's look here at the Pacers moving forward. We've got the game. We are taping this, by the way, Wednesday afternoon. There's a Thursday night game in Minneapolis. That Timberwolves game for us last night was a fantastically interesting game. Andrew Wiggins, a game-winning shot, I think out in Phoenix, right? And in the Timberwolves, their record isn't great, but you see the young talent there. You know they're probably headed north. And personally, a team like Minnesota, I would look at with much more danger than I would most of the teams around them in the standings. I don't know if you agree with that, but I just look at their players. There's a lot more talent, in my opinion, that's maybe not, you know, come together yet, and it's maybe a little bit too young. But there is a lot of raw talent out there in Minneapolis.
Maybe. Although, if I had to pick a team that was going to finish eighth in that logjam of teams in the Western Conference, I think I'd probably would go with Denver. And maybe that's just recency bias in what I saw out of them, and thinking that maybe they've got a little bit more for this season than the Timberwolves, who have a bright future. But you have to be a little bit scared of a team who has the talent, has struggled all season to try to put it together, and all of a sudden looks like they've got some confidence. I was surprised in watching the NBA TV recap this morning when they started that highlight. They said, you know, Phoenix is just two games behind Minnesota to start the night. And you think of Phoenix and you just think, oh, they're 14th or 15th in the West. And in reality, nobody in the West is out of the mix for the eighth spot. So that has also kept any of these teams with bad records from believing they have a chance to accomplish something, and the goal of every player is to get into the playoffs. And so if that eighth seed is still out there dangling, then every team in that Western Conference is capable of putting together a good performance and getting wins on different nights that can help put them in the mix for the eighth spot. And the Pacers have shown, and I don't have to repeat this, but the Pacers have lost to almost all of those teams at one point this season. They lost a game to the Lakers, lost to Dallas, lost to Phoenix. You'd like to see them take care of business and sweep a season series against one of these teams that is 10th through 15th in the East or in the West. So first of two games against Minnesota. I didn't know whether watching that game you'd rather a team lose and be angry or win, and maybe you'd think that they were either confident or maybe they would let down a little bit. But in reality, with where Minnesota has been this season, I wouldn't think they'd have a letdown. I think you just have to think about this in terms of, right now, this Pacers team is better than that Minnesota team. But it is on the road where the Pacers have struggled mightily. But also, the Pacers have to be angry. And even, I would say, through 44 games, I've heard either before or after a game, I've heard the coaching staff reference scrappiness or sense of urgency at least once before probably 40, before or after 40 of those 44 games. Either it's something they either need to do or it's an explanation for even why they won or why they lost. And so when you've got lost three games in a row like this, when you've struggled a little bit over the last week, you've had 2 days off. I think that's pretty important as well. You can finally maybe start to put the London trip behind you, because it was an unusual schedule, and I'm making no excuses for this team, but the guys have been a little bit unusual in the sleep patterns and just figuring out what time zone they're in. I think starting Thursday, you don't need to bring that up anymore. If you look at the end of the season and you might try to look back and explain some losses in January, maybe you could say that that wasn't the best for the team because they had a lot of momentum. They went to London. It seems like they don't have that momentum right now. However, this game against the Timberwolves, all of that's in the past, and you have to think about an even 500 record, and that gets the guys' attention. Some might say that they don't look at the standings or they don't, you know, worry about where they're at. I think that pretty much most of them are aware of the standings. And when they fell two or three games below 500 in late December, I think that the alarm sounded. And that was when we heard Paul George talk about not having fun. And I think that, you know, he spoke out a little bit this week, but he tends to speak out when he thinks that it's necessary. And you can only look at what LeBron James said this week, because how many times over his career have we in January heard LeBron sound the panic alarms? And he did that even this week for a team that's first in the Eastern Conference. So I tend to think, and this has been a hard team to figure out, and each game I'm not really sure which one's going to show up, except that you have seen them struggle on the road. But I think you're going to see the Pacers' best effort on Thursday. And if the Pacers bring their best effort, I think that'll be better than what Minnesota's best effort is. I think this is a very, very important game, and I think it's one that can get them to start to get a little more confidence.
Just personally, and I know the fans like this too, I love the games where Miles Turner gets to go up against one of these other really impressive young bigs, and there, you know, are a lot in this league. Karl-Anthony Towns, certainly Kristaps Porzingis, we just saw it. Nikola Jokic, we just saw it. There's a couple of, you know, other really good young bigs in this league who can step out and hit the three-pointer, hit the long two consistently. Karl-Anthony Towns, I think, is at the head of that class. It's fantastic as Miles Turner has been. Anthony Towns was the number one pick, and I think he has totally lived up to his billing. His stats, and part of it is because Minnesota doesn't have, you know, they don't have a Paul George on their team, but his stats are nuts for a second-year guy. 22 points, 12 rebounds, a block and a half per game. I mean, he has been fantastic. And when you look back at the 2015 draft, I personally, it's too early to totally evaluate it, but you can already see how things would have changed, you know, just a year and a half past it. I think Anthony Towns certainly goes one. Porzingis probably two is what most GMs would say. And then I think you're looking at Miles Turner third, ahead of a guy like Jahlil Okafor who went third, a guy ahead of D'Angelo Russell who went second. I look at that draft class. I think I see probably four stars. Karl-Anthony Towns, Porzingis, Miles Turner, and I really like Devin Booker, even though statistically he's maybe not having that jump of a season that some people thought he would have, although he's been good lately. And so I'm going to be fascinated to watch Miles Turner go against Karl-Anthony Towns. Those two guys, I think, are going to be two stars going on for the future of this league. Indiana then comes and hosts. It'll be on a back-to-back, which, of course, will be difficult. The Sacramento Kings on Friday, a team the Pacers just saw a win in Sacramento after Indiana got behind by 22. And unfortunately for them, they're without Rudy Gay now. The story with the Kings, I think at least, as always, is can you control Cousins enough? And if you can, especially without Rudy Gay, there's not a whole lot around him that really strikes fear.
Yeah, but look who were the culprits on Monday when you played the Knicks. I mean, it was Hermangosa and Holiday, you know. So anybody on that team, if they can pair themselves up with Cousins, they can be successful. I just hope that Boogie's nice to everyone he encounters, because he just strikes me as an angry person. And I like to have a good feeling and a good vibe inside the field house. And so maybe we can see him smile, but not at the end of the game. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what is a fun weekend, because you got the Kings on Friday, and then I'll ask you about the Rockets on Sunday. James Harden comes to town. The Rockets are capable of having some letdown performances, but they've been basically the third-best team in the Western Conference, maybe fourth-best team in the NBA this season. And so you've got two home games that, you know, if you could somehow, let's say they could win these three games. I mean, I don't know. The way they're playing, many would say that that won't happen. But you've got a fun weekend at least planned here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse.
Yeah, I certainly think it's doable for Indiana. And one thing that Paul George has done throughout his career is he's done a pretty good job in general on James Harden. And maybe you're catching the Rockets at a decent time, because on January 10th, they were 31-9. Now they're 34-14. So since January 10th, they're 3-5. And while there is a loss to Golden State in there, there's a loss to Miami in there, a loss to Minnesota in there, a loss to Milwaukee in there. So it's very clear that right now they're not playing their best ball, and the Pacers do have a guy that they can put on Harden. And, you know, I like that matchup. I think Houston's really good. I think they have done exactly what they needed to do, which is, you know, ramp up the pace, put the ball in James Harden's hand as much as possible, but get guys around him, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, some of those pieces that they have brought in. And I think that is exactly what, if you're Houston, you needed to do to maximize a guy like Harden. And I think for them, while Capella is a similar style of player to Howard in that he's a bruising, rebounding big who can't shoot free throws, I think Harden, that was maybe a little bit of a gain for them to lose him, despite the fact that that might not seem logical. I just think that team runs better when it's guard oriented. I think Harden's obviously fantastic, and that'll be a great show at the Fieldhouse. You know, you only get to watch guys like James Harden here once a year in Indianapolis. Of course, Pacers.com/tickets is how you can be there. But on Sunday, a really good matchup. Guys like Cousins, I should say, you only get to see once a year. Pacers.com/tickets is how you can be in the Fieldhouse. Let's see, your pregame coverage will start. That's an 8 o'clock tip, right, out in Minneapolis. So 7:30 pregame coverage on Thursday.
That's correct. 7:30 for Pacers Live pregame, and also in that 7 to 8 o'clock Eastern hour, the All-Star reserves will be announced. And I've been watching and reading some of the different analysts with their picks, and while the media members can make selections of who they think should be the reserves, it's the coaches who make the picks, so we'll obviously be watching the coverage and try to find out as soon as we can, and then discuss if Paul George is able to make the All-Star team, which it seems like that he is deserving for sure, and that if he gets the coach's vote, you know, he'll be back headed to New Orleans, which I think also is a good accomplishment for Paul and a good representation of the franchise, and hopefully that's what we'll be able to be talking about on Thursday. And I have to correct myself, Hernan Gomez. I don't know why I was thinking of maybe I was thinking of a mimosa when I was talking about him earlier, but it is morning, actually. You said afternoon, and you spilled the beans a little bit. I'm doing this in the morning because this afternoon I'm flying to Minnesota, so
fair enough.
I wanted to correct myself.
By the way,
we don't need anyone coming after me. But thanks to all the fans for listening, and hopefully this one. You know, I will say this, Pat, and as we had a little bit of fun on this podcast and talked about some different topics, and you know, maybe put a little bit of a positive spin. You know, the last week has been tough, and watching that game while not working the game, it was difficult because then I became more of the like. Sitting next to Chris, he got pretty fired up as well. Chris has been fired up lately. The fans heard it on the air in Salt Lake City. He was kind of critical of the officiating, and then watching the Knicks game, he was pretty frustrated in the second half as well. And I think that you try to think about January in terms of, I feel like every January I've been this close to the team, there have been these lulls, and we see them around the NBA, and you know, many people in baseball season, they talk about dog days of summer, and January is that month of dog days. I thought this year it would be a little different because of the London trip, because it would make the month go faster, because there was that 1 week where you only had the one game, and then you had, you know, some home games and maybe some more winnable games. But I've heard, I think Stan Van Gundy talked about the silly season because you lose a game and everybody wants to trade everybody. And so I'm not making excuses, and I think this team is a little bit, you could say, unfortunately, through 44 games, you kind of can't expect a huge turnaround. But I think they're definitely better than they've shown over the last week. And I would caution against completely slamming your hand against that panic button, because I think they're definitely better than what they've shown. And let's see what happens when they can kind of, you know, get their footing and play with a little more confidence.
Yeah, and we'll wrap this up here. You brought up the All-Star point, and I know we've had some questions about that. Paul George, as it relates to the All-Star game. I, of course, have no inside information. This is, as you mentioned, a coach pick for the reserves. I would be blown away if Paul doesn't make the All-Star game. And I know some, you know, might say that Paul hasn't had quite the year they were hoping for. But if you think about it, the starters were already named, and so three front court players have already been named. The coaches get to name three more front court players and then two more alternates. So there's still five more openings for Paul George available, and you've already taken three of the top options away. It would be, in my opinion, a travesty if he didn't make it. And he's almost positive going to make it, because the coaches' vote is typically the one that is the most correct. Those guys watch guys night in and night out. And Paul George is, you know, he's an Olympian. He's one of the best two-way players in the league. You know, he'll probably tell you that he was hopeful his season would be a little bit better, but he's had a really good year in general this year. When you compare it to the rest of the NBA, he's one of the best players in the league. He's going to make this All-Star game. I'm 99.9% sure. There's no way that you can pick five more guys in the Eastern Conference in the front court that are ahead of him. And I do think he's going to make it, and I think you will see him over there at the All-Star break playing in the All-Star game. Before we let this go, one more shout-out to the fans on Reddit. We've had a handful of orders come in for the Reddit group night, so I'm glad to see that is going well. If you are one of our Reddit followers, please look at that post up there and that Reddit night that you guys have started that we, with the help, by the way, Matt Schroll listened to Steve Reitan, which is another guy who works over there in ticket sales, came up to me and he told me, Jeremiah, that Matt Schroll has been unbearable this week because of all the time that we gave him in the podcast. So
Matt Schroll heavy. At least the only time I want to talk about him that much is if we're doing an NCAA tournament podcast and we're talking about Valparaiso basketball. Other than that, I don't see the need to bring his name up as many times, but you just did it again. So I'm beginning to wonder if he's paying you for lunch or something under the table.
Don't worry, Steve. We're done on that topic. But Redditors, yes, you can still sign up for that group night. It is, I believe, Feb 11 against Milwaukee. It's the 90s night. Reggie Miller bobblehead looking at the schedule right now. February 11th, it's Saturday. So you can go on that website.
You could get a Reggie Miller bobblehead and you can meet Pat Boylan. I mean, I don't know which you'd be more looking forward to.
Most importantly, hopefully, meet Jeremiah Johnson. So we will iron out all those details. We've been in contact with the moderators over there at Reddit, and we will hopefully hammer out all those details and hopefully make something work. But certainly the more of you that are able to show up for that game, the more able hopefully we can be to make something along those lines happen. All right, that should wrap it up again. Indiana Pacers in Minnesota, Minneapolis, on Thursday taking on the Timberwolves, 7:30 Fox Sports Indiana pregame show with Jeremiah Johnson on the television side. If you're in the car, catch us on the radio at 7:30 as well. The Kroger pregame show beginning a half hour before every Pacers game throughout the season. I think that wraps it up for this edition of the Sideline Guys podcast. Anything else from you, JJ?
No, Pat, what do you say we do this next Monday or Tuesday and we can talk a little more basketball?
And maybe we'll be talking about three straight wins, hopefully. So that would be nice.
Well, that's kind of what I meant, but yeah.
Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.